Some of us are more adultish than others. Welcome. Welcome to Northgate. It's good to be back with you guys. I know Haley and I, we've been on sort of a vacation. We went to Hawaii and visited a lot of our old friends from over there that we, when we lived over there, we went to church. I was youth pastor over there. And so we got to go back and see the old church and take the kids around and see a lot of the old places that we used to enjoy visiting. So we went there and then spent a week up in Twain Heart. So we're glad to be back with you all. We missed you all. And I'm privileged to get to speak to you guys this morning. Just a couple of announcements for us before I get into the message. We are continuing our Family Fun Fridays that are going throughout the summer. So this Friday, we'll be in here. We're watching a movie. We'll have nachos. I'm not sure what the movie is. Is Lizzie in here? She's not in here. I'm sure it'll be good. So it'll be fun. Family-friendly movie with nachos. You can't beat nachos. So Friday at, I believe, 6 p.m. Yeah. And that'll be our last Friday night one. I know, summer's already kind of winding down. And then we're going to culminate the summer with a record-breaking challenge, world record challenge on August 7th that we'll do after church on Sunday. So don't want to miss those. It's a great time to meet new people. If you guys are newer to the church, it's an awesome opportunity to kind of just hang out, have some food, have some good conversations, talk story. It'll be good. Two other things. Next week, a lot of people are heading up to the Brethren Conference. And so we're kind of expecting a smaller service in here, but I'm super excited about it. It's going to be more, we're calling it intimate, and I'm going to talk about the intimacy of the Lord. And I am starting to pray right now for prophetic words for everybody who is here. So I want you guys to kind of come next week expecting to hear a personalized, individual message from the Lord. And I want you guys to be praying for each other too, for those of you that will be here next Sunday. What I'm anticipating is just maybe one or two tables sitting together and sharing these words for each other, whether they're words of affirmation or words of encouragement or words of correction. I want us to kind of enjoy just a more intimate service together. So you can expect that if you'll be here next week. And then thirdly, we have a Sabbath Sunday coming up in 3 weeks, which is new for us, all right? And there are intentions behind it. We're not taking a Sabbath Sunday from meeting together. We still want to meet together. We're just going to kind of do it in a different way. Since a lot of our leadership will be up at conference and won't be back in time for service on Sunday, Jesse and I are putting together a little Sabbath Sunday video for you. We won't be meeting in the building on that day, but we will have an opportunity for you to gather and watch a teaching, a video from us. If you want to get together in a house with someone, we highly encourage that. If someone's like, hey, we still want to get together, let's do breakfast or brunch, or we still want to talk about the Word, we encourage everybody to do that. So we'll have more direction on that as it gets closer, but we just wanted to make you aware of it now. All right. So let's jump into our message today. This message, I was praying for two words to kind of help direct it, and I'm speaking on culture and more specifically church and culture. And this is something that I feel like I have a little bit of an expertise in. I've had the opportunity to travel around the world multiple times. I've been to, you know, lots of different countries. I've got to experience the church in different cultures that express worship in extremely different ways. Some of those being like the underground church in China. I've seen them as they huddle inside of a small room and keep their voices quiet so that the government officials won't hear them and come in and kill them, right? I've been a part of small gatherings in India, right, where they get a double-sided drum, right, and they make the music is extremely loud because it's a small room and there's 100 people in it, right? I've seen the church in Turkey and Israel and Egypt and even in some of our Latino cultures down the Dominican Republic and in Mexico. And I've had the opportunity, and I've been blessed with the opportunity to be able to see the way that they worship. I've also served as a pastor here in America for many years and was raised here, and this is my home culture. And I see us as a culture in America going through an identity crisis. Not just in our churches, but as a nation as well. And I don't have to speak too much about this, right? We've seen, so I'm talking about culture, but within our culture, we also have subcultures. We have our national identity. We have our church culture. We have our individualized cultures, including our ethnicities, our genders, the family styles that we've come from, the family, our extended families, our schools that we've been to, right? There's cultures, subcultures within each one of us that really identify and make up who we are. And the three that I really want to look at today are our nation, our church, and ourselves. Okay. Now, when we talk about our nation, it's kind of obvious, right? I'm not going to go into the politics, the Roe versus Wade, whether it's LGBTQ, immigration, gas prices, gun laws, EPA, NRA, and then all the other three-letter acronyms that you can throw in there as well. I'm not going to go into those because I believe that we have people inside of our church on both sides of the political spectrum that love Jesus deeply in their heart. I'm looking around at faces and I'm not seeing a whole lot of smiles, but I do believe that if you're on one side of the aisle or one side of the political spectrum and you believe passionately that this is the way that it needs to be, there is somebody equally on the other side of the political spectrum saying the same exact thing with the same exact intensity. And that's sort of our problem. That's sort of the identity crisis that I'm seeing. I see the politics in our country strangling the church, strangling this gathering of believers, because our political stances have driven us further and further apart from each other. For instance, if I were to open the floor right now to let you guys kind of express your opinions on any of these political matters, I believe some of you would walk out and not come back ever again. And that's why I'm not opening the floor to that discussion, okay? It's not an open discussion. I encourage you to save that for a cup of coffee and a friend sometime in the near future or distant future. Of course, there's always been a tension between church and state. Always, right? We've had tension from the beginning of time. But concerningly, the divide is becoming stronger and stronger. And in this morning's message, I want to look at culture, more specifically the culture. And though our national politics define part of who we are, I'd like to stay more focused on what brings us together instead of what divides us, okay? So, in the church, what brings us together, if this will work for me, is it up or down? It's neither. Okay. In the church, what brings us together is Jesus, okay? The reason why we come and we meet on Sunday mornings is because of Jesus. And Jesus was not a stranger to political unrest, right? If we think about Jesus' life, from the very beginning of his birth, somebody was trying to kill him. King Herod, right? He was searching him out so that he could kill him as a baby. And as he grew older and he started preaching inside of the synagogue and he was sharing his message, the Pharisees started to come against him. Somebody in political power was always trying to kill Jesus. So he knew how to live within a politically strained culture and still accomplish the work of glorifying God. Guess what? We can too. We can still exist within this politically strained culture and glorify God. In fact, I love the comfort that's given to us in Hebrews chapter 4. Am I not? I am on. Okay. I'll just cue you, Daniel, since this thing doesn't seem to be working. In Hebrews chapter 4, it says, "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus the Son of God, Let us hold firmly to the faith we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Now, when I was praying for this service, I was praying for two words, and I was struggling to come up with, I just want two words to kind of guide this message, and the two that I feel like I've landed on where I'm like, this is really what I want, because much of what I'm speaking on today is going to be cerebral. I feel like more of a teacher today than a preacher, but there will be times when I'm going to be preaching to you, right? I want there to be grace and mercy, right? As he says in verse 16, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. And then I also want us to be overcomers. I want us to overcome. I want us to overcome the trials that we face, because we know we have a high priest who's endured the same kinds of things and sufferings and yet was without sin, right? I want us to overcome the dissensions that we have between each other. I want us to overcome any of the conflicts that might be facing your culture, your individual culture, your church culture, or your national culture. I want us to be overcomers, because God says, blessed are those who overcome. And we are in a time of need when we need to approach his throne with confidence, knowing that we will overcome the pains of this life and will issue mercy and grace to help us in our times of need. Okay. So, let's talk about the church. My heart hurts for the church. The church is under attack. I think it's pretty obvious that there is not just a cultural shift in the church, but I would call it more of a cultural breakdown in the church. We're not just shifting, we're falling apart. And I'm not talking about us as a Northgate church. I'm talking about Big C Church in America, and actually around the world, right? And the church is not, and one of the big things that I think the reason why this is because the church has not been efficiently equipping our young people, the next generation, and by young, I'm talking like millennial Gen Z, okay? They haven't been equipped to face the culture that we are now living in. Okay? I listened to some wicked smart people, Tim Keller being one of them. He's just an awesome pastor in New York who is way smarter than I am, who talked about this culture of our young, this next generation coming up, right? And he explained in a way, I can send you the link to the message if you want to listen to it, about the way that we have been indoctrinated as believers being raised in the Gen X or even the earlier millennials, right, or later millennials, whatever, that age range. Most of the theology and indoctrination that we have received from preachers and pastors and the church over the past 100 years or so, actually even back into the Reformation, was specifically intended to refute the teachings of the Catholic Church, right? Because back in the day, in those, you know, 1500s, 1600s, all the way up until into our time period, right? If you were not Catholic, right? Or if you were not Christian, you were Catholic. And it was either one or the other. We assumed that people had a background in church and theology. We assumed a belief in God in some way. And so we still teach a lot of the time toward the refute of Catholic teachings. The problem and the demise of that style of teaching is that our next generation is being raised without church. We've moved from a modern generation into a post-Christian generation, is what a lot of the theologians are calling. We're a post-church generation. Most of the students, I'm a teacher up in Stockton, most of my students have no background in church. I have no solid understanding or basis to stand on that says that this is who God is or this is who Jesus is. The parents aren't teaching them this. And it's an entire generation where we're at risk of losing an entire generation because we're not teaching the right way to them, right? It's not necessarily that we're not teaching good things or teaching about Jesus and who he is. It's that we're not reaching the generation in a way that they need to hear it. We're speaking to a different culture of people. And unfortunately, the alternative narratives are winning. And I see the church losing more and more battles every day. So he talks in this message that I listened to, he talks about the inoculation or the indoctrination of our younger students and how we need to reach them. We need to start asking some of these questions and addressing some of the questions that are facing them today. You guys, we might have heard these as well. How does the doctrine of the Trinity differ from what the people say about human life today? What does the Bible say about the gospel? How is that different from the identity narratives out there today? That our primary identity is something that is found inside of yourself, is what people will teach today. Or that our primary identity is found in our gender or in our race. Yes, those are subcultures of who we are, and our identity in who we are, like our gender, our race, our ethnicities, our, what's the other one? Oh, the finding ourselves. Those are important, but those are all secondary to what Jesus teaches us is our primary identity. And if we're not teaching identity in Christ, right, we're missing out on what all these other questions are that the next generation is asking. I know one of the things that I've struggled with, what's the church? What's the church supposed to look like? Right? Are we supposed to be growing our church into mega churches? Or are we supposed to be making smaller groups of churches inside houses? Right? Honestly, I don't know. I don't know what the correct answer is. But we need to start asking the questions. Okay? Jesus asked the question, Daniel, go ahead and go to the next slide. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. Says, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And then he orders his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. I actually hope that you guys come away with more questions than answers today. That you are asking these kinds of questions. Who do you say I am? Ask that about yourselves, right? Ask that about the church. Ask that about the nation and any of the other subcultures that you are a part of. Who do you say who do people say that I am? And who am I? What is your identity? And what is your primary identity? I believe that here at Northgate and within the Brethren Church at large, we are asking that question, who are we? And we're going to continue asking that question. For those of you that are going to National Conference next week, this will be a discussion in one of our business meetings, or at least it'll be presented. It's the National Vision Statement. Daniel, throw that up there. It says, our vision, this is on the national level, is to be a diverse family of Brethren churches. I'll read it slow because I want it to sink in. Right? Our vision is to be a diverse family of Brethren churches led by the Word and Spirit innovating together to create spaces for every tribe, language, race, and nation to encounter God's redemptive kingdom. Keywords: diversity, word and spirit, innovating, God's redemptive kingdom, with all these language, nation, race, and tribe. I want to hone in specifically this morning, maybe we can do some more on this later, on diversity, okay? And I'm going to take some stuff from my master's thesis, because I put a lot of time into it, and there is a section on there in my thesis where I really hone in on diversity in the classroom, and I wanted to just share it with you guys, because I had a twofold objective in writing my thesis, in that, yes, in our classroom, we have a diverse group of students. In Stockton, you guys know, kind of, if you're familiar with the area, Stockton has a reputation, right? And that reputation is in my classroom. And it is diverse. It is extremely diverse. And so in my classroom, I'm trying to figure out, how do I have a culturally responsive type of teaching in my fieldwork of STEM? When I'm doing my research and I'm reading all these things about impacting your students, responding to the cultures that they live in to get them engaged in their classwork, because, I mean, who really wants to do math, right? Unless you're Asian, like me. I love doing math, but most of my students don't. So how do I teach it to them in a way where they want to do this, right? It's like, it's what all the great advertisers and marketers do. They tell you something that you don't even know that you want yet, and then they give it to you, right? Apple's great at it. They're like, I didn't even know I didn't want a button on my phone. Now I do. So engaging them based on where their culture is at. And as I'm studying all this stuff, I'm like, wow, this is so applicable to my classroom, but it's so applicable to the church as well. And so I wanted to share some of the quotes that I found that I'm like, whoa, this is so good for the church too. So culture, first of all, to define it, is the norms, the practices, and the dispositions that are held by a given group of people. And then in order to understand them, the intercultural competence encompasses the ability to effectively and efficiently interact with those cultures. Okay? So culture being your norms, your practices, your dispositions, you guys kind of understand. Everybody has different norms within their house or their classroom or their workplace, and everybody has a different disposition about them and how they do it. In order to really understand or be competent about that culture, you have to be able to effectively and efficiently interact with these cultures. Now, when I'm thinking about the church, I'm like, oh, we really need to understand this culture of Gen Z. If we want to continue the lifespan of the church in America, we have to adapt and understand a new generation. Now, that's hard, because this generation is weird. Right? There is some crazy different, okay, I won't say whacked out, because that'd be slamming on them. It's different. It's just different ways of thinking. And if we're going to understand and be competent in reaching them, we have to understand their ways of thinking. Okay, next one. Williams Duncan is the guy who wrote this. The article that I'm pulling most of this stuff from is called Cross-Cultural Community Building Strategies for Improving Interactions in Diverse Educational Settings. This is a long title for, like, hey, how do we interact with the next generation? Suggested that positive interactions in multicultural contexts can be fostered through attaining intercultural competency of one another's underlying perceptions and interpretations that inform member dispositions, and these understandings are imperative to understanding the power of the culture. Okay? If we want to understand where the power is coming from, why people are doing the things that they do, we have to understand what is driving them. What is encouraging them to move in those directions? Furthermore, he says, failure to have concern can unintentionally diminish one or more of the students' cultural groups and encourage disengagement from a personal culture or sought-after profession. Now, if you just kind of change a few of those words, you can slip church in there, right? If we fail to have concern for who our kids are, or who the millennials are, who the Gen Zs are, if we fail to have concern for them, we're not doing this on purpose, but we will unintentionally diminish or say, hey, you're not really welcome here, okay? One or more of those students' cultural groups and encourage disengagement from a personal culture or from a church, because the church has a personal culture as well, or a sought-after profession, or a group of relationships that could be really good for them, right? So failure to have concern can push them away. And we need to be concerned about what is being taught to our students, where our students are moving, what they're doing, why they're doing it, just a concern. So the next one from another guy says, in order to create unashamed diverse communities inside a STEM classroom, or if you switch that to church, one must reflect acceptance of other cultures and internalize their own self-awareness. Okay? And when I was reading this, I was like, oh man, Paul said this. He said, I will be all people, or I will be all things to all people so that I might save some. This is exactly what they're saying here. We need to internalize our own self-awareness. You can be yourself. Like, honestly, I've talked with a lot of people in this room, and many of you don't know where I stand politically on things. And I'm not going to tell you most of the time. Because I know what I believe, but because I believe that doesn't mean that you have to believe it politically, right? I'm not trying to push this on you. You're coming from your own set of cultural areas that I don't understand completely. And there's reasons why you're going to think the ways that you do. My concern for you is not to sway you politically in one way or the other. My concern for you is to point you to Jesus. Because Jesus is what brings us together. And I'm concerned about, you know, the things that are going on in your life, why culturally those things are happening to you. But my number one concern so you understand who Jesus is and what he's done for you. Lastly, by openly welcoming diversity, community is cultivated and confidence is constructed, which in turn establishes a learning environment that produces diverse intercultural acceptance. That's my goal for my classroom. And that's my goal for the church. That we can exist inside a body of believers with diverse backgrounds, with diverse subcultures, with diverse ethnicities, with diverse genders, with diverse people. All those different subcultures thrown into one so that we can interculturally accept that Christ binds us all together. That in Christ we find a community that says you can be diverse and still be accepted here at Northgate, here in the church. Sorry, I said lastly, I got one more. Until students are able to see, or we can not say students, people, until we can see others of similar background and culture as examples of success in the field of STEM, teachers, educators, and identifiably iconic representatives in STEM will continue to look culturally homogenous. Now, if you switch that to church, right, slightly different way, until we start to see people like us with things that we stand for and subcultures that we represent, interact with the church, be loved, accepted, be a part of the body, right? It's not until that happens that diversity will really take over in our churches. So, here's the challenge, okay? To effectively understand and embrace diverse cultures, one must experience a culture that is different from their own. If you're a Republican, go have lunch with a liberal. If you're pro-life, go have lunch with someone who is pro-choice. If you are gay, go have lunch with someone who is straight. If you are black, go have lunch with someone who is white. In doing so, we break down these divides and say, let's come together on the basis of Jesus and bring it all back to Him. So, few questions for you. In looking at ourselves here at Northgate, what is our culture? And I can answer this out loud. Maybe I'll ask it this way. What are three words or phrases that describe who we are? And I'm not looking for our values, because those do describe who we are. But what are some of the things that we have as a culture here at Northgate? Who are we? I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Talk around your tables, okay? Come up with a word that you can share or a phrase that you can share with us. Who are we? Not our values, but our identity. To help guide that, how do you describe Northgate to your friend who's never been here? Okay. Go ahead, 2 minutes. All right, I hear a little lull, which means some people got to say some things. Can someone share with me, what are some phrases or words that came out? Relational, absolutely. We're great at that here. Yeah. What else? Not flashy. Yeah, in a good way. Look at me. Thank you, Ed. Perfect. That's a good word, approachable. Maybe one more. Accepting. Yeah. He accepted me. Right? I'm an outsider coming in. I've been here like 2 years, I think. You guys let me come preach? Maybe not after today, but... Right? Yeah. I want everybody to know, if you are here this morning, we are glad that you are here. We want to know you. We are relational. And no, we're not going to hide behind... We don't have extra $100,000 lights that are going to flash on the stage. We don't even have a drummer, right? Like... We're not about the flash, but we are about Jesus. And when you come here, I hope that you discover Jesus. You find him. You find him in each one of us in the conversations that you have with each other. Even when my theology might be a little bit off, even if my subculture directs me a little bit differently than the way that you might think is right, you're welcome here. You're a vital part to the community of the church. You have a gift that is meant to be given to the body of Christ, and we want you to walk in it. Some of you are prophets. Some of you are evangelists. Some of you are teachers and preachers. And you have a vital, important part to this body, to the body of Christ. And if you're visiting, wherever it is that you call home, you have a vital and important part to the body of Christ. We want you to walk in it. I'm going to go ahead and worship welcome the worship team to come on up as I leave you with this one last thought from Revelation chapter 7, verse 9 and 10. And that I want us to figure this out here on this side of heaven, because it doesn't change when we are worshiping God in the throne room. There's an image given to us in chapter 7, verse 9 of Revelation, where it says, "After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every tribe, nation, people, and language." Guess what? Your ethnicity doesn't leave you when you die. The diversity within you carries on along with you when we go into the throne room of heaven and start worshiping God. It says, "Standing before the throne and before the Lamb, they were wearing white robes and they were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb.'" This morning, as a diverse group of people, I want us to come together with all of our uniquities, everything that makes us who we are, and worship God, because salvation belongs to our God. Would you guys go ahead and stand with us? We'll sing these last couple songs.